Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Schindler joins us today for a fabulous talk on life and what it means to be pro-life, because many times people look at a cute little baby and say it's not good to kill babies, but they don't realize the value of saving also all people and respecting all life, no matter who the person is or how old the person is. So, Bobby, can you tell us a little bit about what brought you into becoming engaged in trying to help people who are disabled?
Well, it started way back in 1990, February 25th, when Terry was only 26 years old. She collapsed while home alone with her then husband Michael Schiavo. To this day, we don't know what caused that collapse, but because of that collapse, as a result of going several minutes without oxygen, she experienced a profound brain injury, and from that point on, she was dependent on others for her constant care.
And so you found out that she was sustained this terrible injury, and did the family think she was going to recover? And the story I heard is originally her husband was very supportive.
Well, that's correct. Initially we didn't know whether Terry was going to live or die, but she did survive those first critical days. And the first 2 years, Terry was receiving therapy and rehabilitation to help her with her brain injury. A lot of people, really to this day, there's been a lot of confusion that's still being reported by the mainstream media about her condition. And Terry was not brain dead. She was not terminal. She was not in a coma. She was not hooked up to machines. Terry essentially was just like all of us, other than the fact that she had difficulty swallowing and needed a feeding tube to administer her food and hydration. But physically, she needed constant rehabilitation and therapy, and unfortunately, it was denied to her back just a couple years after her initial collapse, and she was warehoused and abandoned by her husband and guardian, Michael Schiavo.
And so when that happened, your family stepped up to the plate and said, look, if you don't want to take care of your wife, we will take care of her?
Excuse me, that's exactly what happened. Michael, it was around 1993 when the rift occurred between Michael and our family. And it was really at that time, 1993, people don't realize how long we were battling him. He went on this pursuit to end Terry's life. Now, we didn't know at the time, we found out later, that he began living with, cohabitating with another woman, eventually fathering two children with this woman while still being married to Terry. So it became obvious to us that his loyalties had shifted initially, where he was helping Terry to try and get better. And she was improving, incidentally. She was responding to the therapy and rehabilitation. She was starting to speak. But he had a shift in his loyalties, where he was starting a new family, and he basically wanted to end Terry's life. And at the time, there was, not to get into a lot of the details of what was going on, but there was a medical malpractice lawsuit that he initiated, which subsequently granted or put in a medical fund established for Terry of almost $1.5 million. So there was a considerable amount of money, and I believe when Michael petitioned the court to take away Terry's food and hydration, I believe at the time there was close to $1 million in this trust fund. Because he was the guardian, he would inherit. So there was a lot of conflicts of interest, and we believed from the beginning it wasn't in Michael's best interest to care for Terry, and that's really what our family wanted from the onset, just to bring Terry home and care for her. Tell Michael, look, you have a fiancé, you're starting a new family, just give Terry back to us. But he refused and went on to to have her feeding tube removed after a long, prolonged battle.
So the medical malpractice suit was based upon the judge declared that the doctor had mishandled the case?
Well, prior to Terry's collapse, there was some question by her gynecologist and treating physician on some of her treatment, which Michael was arguing led to her collapse. It was, incidentally, later, many years later, after the ruling by the jury, the doctors were exonerated and found that they were not negligent in their care of my sister. But nevertheless, at the time, the jury did award. Michael was suing for $20 million for Terry's lifelong care, rehabilitation, therapy. But he was awarded, as I said, close to $1.5 million. And he himself walked away with about $500,000 in loss of consortium. But this was a medical trust that was supposed to be used for Terry's rehabilitation therapy, but instead was used to end her life. And as I said, he was the inheritor of this fund and was really providing, we believe, motive to end Terry's life along with this woman that he was now living with. And really had no interest, it seemed to us, anymore for caring for my sister.
So he was concerned that if he divorced her, he would no longer have access to the medical fund?
That's correct. If he divorced Terry, he would no longer be guardian. Therefore, when she died, he would not no longer be the recipient of that money.
So was there a time earlier in the saga when he had the feeding tube removed and you were able to get a court order to put it back?
Yes, and fast forward to 2000 now, when the original trial that Michael petitioned the court to take away Terry's food and hydration. Again, the only thing keeping Terry alive, Terry was very mobile. We could take her anywhere in a wheelchair if we wanted to. We had to go through Michael. We had to get permission from him. But nevertheless, all she needed was a wheelchair. We could take her anywhere. This notion that she was confined to a bed, that she was just, media tried to portray her, was absolutely false. Terry was very much alive, at times very responsive, and she was a woman with a severe brain injury. Nevertheless, 2000, when this went to the original trial, and the prolonged legal battle that occurred 5 years subsequent to the Judge Greer's ruling, our family was successful in reinserting Terry's feeding tube on two occasions after it had been removed.
Yeah, and I followed the story when it became national about them wanting to remove her feeding tube. I did not believe that our country would allow this to happen. I remember every day when they really did remove the tube being horrified and thinking that the legal channels will reinsert it again because you were successful the last time. And I remember vividly driving down the street one night on my way to a meeting. I was listening to Sean Hannity on the radio, and he sounded like the Rangers were going to come in or the National Guard, and they were going to rescue her. And I was so excited. I remember pounding my steering wheel and saying, yes. I mean, there were so many roller coaster moments of it looks good, and then it looks bad, and then good. And it really gripped me and gripped the whole nation because we've never seen a case go to the U.S. Congress just dealing with one person. And yet it was, of course, one of the most worthy uses of our time. You went to Congress, and were you optimistic when you realized Congress was considering a bill that would save her life?
Well, we were very optimistic, and the bill did eventually pass. And a lot of people, the media has done a brilliant job of convoluting the issue and really spinning it in a way where they made the government become the bad guys in this, when what you said is absolutely right. They were trying to protect my sister. And really, Terry didn't represent Terry. I mean, she was representing hundreds of thousands of others in similar conditions that are really in the crosshairs of what's happening in our country today, and that's having food and water denied, deliberately taken away from people like Terry, the elderly, and so many others. But essentially what Congress did, and people don't realize, all Congress did was pass a law that afforded Terry the same rights as those on death row. And what do we mean by that? Well, people on death row, before they're executed, they are afforded a federal review by the federal courts before the state can put them to death. So when Congress looked at the fact that an innocent woman with a disability was not given the same opportunity of a federal review as we give those that are going to be executed on death row, they passed a law that did just that. And that's all they did. They gave Terry the same opportunity that we give those on death row. And I think for a woman with a disability who is innocent of any crime, for Congress to pass that type of bill, I don't understand. Well, I understand what happened. People don't realize that's exactly what Congress did. But to this day, Congress is vilified, and the way the media has spun it, you would have thought that Congress walked into the hospice room and was intimately or was trying themselves to reinsert Terry's feeding tube when that was not the fact. I mean, they were just giving Terry a safety net like all people on death row are given.
And so they gave her the safety net, and then what happened next? Did it go to the Supreme Court?
Well, it was going back and forth to the Supreme Court, but that was different from the federal review. Unfortunately, the federal judge in this case didn't, and this is where it was just, it gets a little complicated, and I'm not an attorney to explain what happened, but basically the federal judge didn't believe, or in his words, reviewed it himself, didn't believe it needed a review, didn't need to review the state courts and their proceedings, and basically just dismissed the law that Congress had passed and allowed Terry to continue her food and water deprivation, where she subsequently died several days after where Congress passed that bill.
Unbelievable. So here we are today. Where I became aware of the idea that we're purposely killing people was Missouri had its own story with Christy Busolaki, who was also brain damaged, and then Jay Nixon became the Attorney General. We did have laws to protect our citizens, and the first day when he became Attorney General, his first act in office was to sign an order dismissing the lawsuit that was keeping her alive. And so that was very tragic and really also created national attention. In the meantime, I had a friend who was a lobbyist with pro-life issues and an ethicist, and she explained to me that a lot of people simply are not even given palliative care, that they're left to suffer. And we need to make it clear that a death by dehydration is not dying from your injuries. It's an intentional and purposeful death. And so maybe you can help us understand, where are we today? What is going on? What is the climate? And what do you see as the next trend?
Well, something our family didn't realize at the time of Terry's situation that we fully realize now is that what happened to Terry was happening every day long before her case made the publicity that it did, and I don't think a lot of people realize that, and it's happening every day as we speak. I think the magnitude of this issue, people have no idea how much it is occurring at healthcare facilities across the country. And you mentioned that the case, and it was the Cruzan case that they established food and water as basic and ordinary. They redefined food and water through a feeding tube as medical treatment, where it was once considered basic and ordinary care. Because of this change on how we define food and water through a feeding tube, it's made it, depending on what state you live in, it's made it rather easy to take it away from individuals, whether they're people like my sister, the elderly, whoever it might be, that they want to somehow hasten the death of these individuals. And again, we have a real problem with our media and the way they report this issue, the way they reference Terry's case, the way they describe, I mentioned how they describe Congress as walking in, they often describe as the government walk, they it's fear tactics, like the government's, as in Terry's case, the government's going to walk into the bedroom and reinsert Terry's feeding tube. They not only used it in that context, but they were trying to scare people and saying, well, what they did with the Chavo case, the government's going to walk in and infringe on all of our privacy rights, which, in fact, quite the opposite is happening with our government-controlled health care now. With health care rationing, people like my sister, the elderly, and so many others are now going to be targeted for having their basic care denied to them in order that they die, and we all know the reason. It seems to me they become financial burdens, so to speak, and we have to find ways to make it easier to kill these individuals.
If there's a family that doesn't have the financial wherewithal to take care of somebody who is a financial burden, what other remedy is there? And I mean, government has taken over so much of what used to belong to the family. What if somebody were told, well, it's going to cost you, $500,000 a year to take care of your loved one? Wouldn't it be easier just to let her die? What is your advice on that?
Well, they're good questions, and they're with our healthcare system, the way it's set up now, you can see why those questions draw concern. I don't know the answers. I know we certainly, as Christians, as human beings, we certainly should be doing whatever we can to care for people that are in situations like my sister and the elderly, without denying them the most basic and ordinary care. It seems to me our nation is now valuing money more than we value human life. I'm not the person that's going to figure out the answers on how we can care for these individuals and the type of care they might need that's going to cost an extraordinary amount of money. But I certainly don't ever advocate a way of fixing our healthcare system is by figuring out easier ways or deciding easier ways that we can kill these individuals because they cost too much. So there's a lot of problems in the healthcare system. I understand that, but we can do a better job than deciding who should live and who should die based on how much it costs to care for these individuals.
One of the most gut-wrenching parts of the story was hearing your mother talk about how they wouldn't even let her so much as moisten Terry's tongue, which seems cruel and horrific. And so my reaction was to file a bill that it would at least allow people to hand feed their loved one. Even a teaspoon of water would have alleviated some of her suffering, even if it hadn't saved her life. Even in the worst case scenario, if somebody had tried to give her a little water by mouth and if she had choked to death, it would have been more tolerable knowing you tried to help her instead of knowing that they were trying to make sure she would die.
Well, the judge, a lot of people don't realize this, that Judge Greer, who ruled that Terry can starve and dehydrate to death, also signed an order that she was to receive no palliative care. So that was an order enforced by the armed police that were guarding Terry during her death process. But how else can you explain this? These types of things are happening every day in our country. Where people are being deliberately starved and dehydrated to death, something that if we do to an animal, we go to jail, and we're doing it to our most innocent, most vulnerable people without much public outrage, and something that was not too long ago thought of as being barbaric.
Well, what really disappointed me is I was a Republican representative. And the Republican Party says in their platform that they're pro-life. That is, the Republican platform is pro-life. The process of filing a bill is you walk around to the other legislators and give them an opportunity to sign on your bill. And because Terry's story was so much in the news every day, I thought, wow, I'm going to have to fight to maintain control of my bill because I'm going to have other representatives wanting to file bills to save people's lives also, and I need to make sure they know it was my idea first. Well, boy, was I surprised, because when I got the bill drafted and I was looking for co-sponsors, I found a lot of people were reluctant to sign on to my bill. And all it said is that we don't dehydrate people in the state of Missouri. We don't cause an intentional death by starvation and dehydration. And I was appalled. I was shocked and amazed. And even one of my Republican colleagues who was a physician told me he was not sure if this was a good bill because of all the patients he's had to help them end their lives. And it should horrify all of us. That was the day I woke up and said, you know what, being Republican doesn't mean you're pro-life anymore. If they don't get this, then what else do they not get?
Well, unfortunately, I think you're absolutely right. And we've been as a foundation, as an organization, we have struggled because of the same type of mentality that people have across the country regarding people like my sister. I think I mentioned it earlier, there's a real disconnect looking at an unborn child and looking at like someone like my sister Terry or someone who is who has Alzheimer's, for example, and we should treat them. We have become desensitized to the value and dignity of everyone's life. We've become indoctrinated into thinking that we cannot decide, really based on some physical capability, whether they should live or die. I mean, think about it. Terry had difficulty swallowing, and we have a society that no longer cares about caring for these individuals, so therefore we have justified in our minds that we can make the decision to kill them. And that's what we're doing. We're deliberately killing human beings because as a nation, we don't want to spend the money or take the time to care for these individuals. And I'm someone who doesn't understand how we have really lost sight of what it means to be a nation of compassion. Where we now think the compassionate thing to do is deliberately kill people, and I don't know if this is an issue that we're going to have the success that we seem to have with much of the abortion issue. I think this is a much much tougher issue to educate the public and to educate them to the value and dignity and how we need to care for these individuals.
Well, I think with abortion we have the possibility that if you really don't want to raise your baby, just give the baby away when the baby's born and somebody else will want your baby and take your baby. We don't have a similar equivalent with disabled people. There is not an option of just sign your loved one away and let somebody else take care of somebody who's laying in a hospital bed. While you and I have heard many, many stories of people who've been brain damaged and even in a coma, in a worse state than Terry, and have come back out of it and been able to talk again, and they remembered everything that happened at their bedside when we thought they were in a coma. They knew everything we were saying about the value of their life and if we should let them come on and stay with us. Do you think Terry could hear what you were saying when you were at her bedside?
No, and there's no doubt in my mind. There's never a doctor ever going to be able to tell me that my sister didn't at times know exactly what we were saying to her, and as I said earlier, Terry was at times very responsive to our family and our interaction with her. But I mean, look what look at the. I mean, we talk about looking at people like my sisters and whether or not we should care for them, Cynthia. I mean, look at how we're treating the. We won't even as a nation. We don't even want to care for those that know. A baby's going to be born with Down syndrome. I mean, what is it? Upwards of 90% of the families that know prior to having the baby it's going to be Down syndrome abort that baby. So if we're not even willing to care for someone, a Down syndrome baby, what does that mean for people like Terry and who do need our dedication and compassion 24 hours, 7 days a week if they are home with us? So as I said, I think and not everybody's like this, obviously. I mean, there's some wonderful people out there, probably more than we know, but what does this say about our nation when we have so easily accepted and are so easy to make the decision that we can deliberately kill somebody because we don't want to care for them anymore?
Well, give us some hope and tell my listeners, since it says in your biography that you are the voice for, you were the voice for Terry, you were her advocate, what would Terry want you to tell everybody today?
Well, it's certainly not about me or my family. This really is a reflection upon our nation and how we're going to care for those like Terry. And I think it's the hardest question for me to answer. What can we do? We need to educate ourselves and stop educating ourselves by what we read in the mainstream media, because for the most part, they are on the other side of the issue, and they have agenda that they're doing their best to get more and more people to accept what happened to Terry to happen to others. So we obviously need to educate ourselves and understand understand the magnitude of the decisions that we're making, particularly if we're Christians and we're God-loving people. and the consequences of how we treat others, particularly the least among us. So, I mean, education obviously is a big part of this, in prayer, and having a deep faithful relationship with our Lord, I think, at least for me, has really helped me as we continue to battle really these forces that we're battling against.
Yeah, I read that on one of your websites that you said your sister's death saved you. Tell us about that one.
Well, I was raised Catholic and went through the parochial school system up through high school and even a Christian college, and it was really in college where I left the church and was no longer partaking in the sacraments, and really my lifestyle, according to the teachings of the church, was leading to eternal damnation. And it was because of my sister's case and my experience with Terry and the people that were involved in her case that led me back to Christ and my Catholic faith. And it really was my sister's experience that brought me back to my relationship with Christ. And I can't, I mean, my thanks to my sister for that obviously could be eternal.
Well, I appreciate that story and that bit of encouragement. I believe that our nation's respect for life is directly related on a parallel line with our fear of God and our regard for God. And as we become more atheistic, if there is no God, then why do we respect life? I was reading an article recently that said that religious women tend to have more children, religious families have more children than atheistic families. So how are your parents doing now?
Well, my mom is fine. My father passed away. Actually, today is the 4-year anniversary when my dad died. And he was really, subsequent to Terry's death, he was really never the same, as you can imagine, any parent. And it took my sister's death so hard that I believe it really led to his death at a rather young age, I think, for this day and age. But yeah, to go back what you're saying, Cynthia, I mean, I think we just don't believe in consequences anymore for our actions. We don't hold ourselves accountable for what we do in life, and I think because of this, it's made it, I think, acceptable and easier to treat individuals the way we're treating them. And then really the disregard and the prejudices that exist, particularly against people with disabilities. I see how much Terry is made fun of and how much he's mocked on the website, on YouTube, on Facebook. And it's really quite sad how easily she is the target of a lot of just offensive humor. But again, it's just kind of our culture we live in today and a barometer of how we view people because they have physical disabilities.
Yeah, so if people would like to learn more, what website are you using to tell the story and engage the volunteers?
It's really easy. It's lifeandhope.com, lifeandhope.com, and we certainly can use people's support and help. As I said, this is a real tough issue for us, and any help that we can receive from anyone is greatly appreciated, and certainly your prayers, your continuing prayers for the work we do and for the people that don't understand this issue. We need to pray for them, and not only this issue, but really all of the life issues, which seems to me is the most important issue facing us today and has been and always will be.
And what is Life and Hope's mission?
Well, our mission is to protect the medically vulnerable, the families that call us that their loved ones are in jeopardy of being killed. I mean, that's our the main objective of what we do. We get calls all the time. We've been involved in hundreds of cases. We've developed just an enormous amount of resources that we can turn to for families that call us if their loved one's in a situation where they feel like their life is in jeopardy in a similar way that Terry's was. And we also do our best to educate and raise awareness. We do a lot of public speaking and do our best to raise awareness on this issue, and that's why we're so grateful for programs like yours and getting the word out. And we're also embarking on trying to establish a brain injury outpatient rehabilitation center here in Philadelphia for people like Terry that are really being abandoned and neglected more and more each day.
That sounds fantastic. I have to say, I went to a conference a few years ago in Pinellas County, and I'll never see the sign the same way. After all the news media, Pinellas has taken on a special place in all of our hearts, and you woke us up, your sister woke us up, and you did a wonderful act in being there for her. And Life and Hope, we appreciate all of you. Thank you for giving us a few minutes out of your day today, and I just want you to know that we thank you for standing up for life.
Well, thank you and the work you're doing. I appreciate your time today. God bless you.
Okay, God bless you too. Thanks, Bobby. This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.